Welcome to the Film Florida podcast. I'm John Lux, and I'm the executive director of Film Florida. Before we get to our interview, if you're not already a member of Film Florida, please consider joining at filmflorida.org. Please also consider going to our website and donating $20.24 for our 2024 fundraising campaign. Visit the Film Florida merchandise page at filmflorida.creator-spring.com to purchase Film Florida t-shirts, sweatshirts, coffee mugs, and more. All merchandise proceeds go to the Film Florida Filmmaker Grant and Scholarship Fund. Hilary Momberger Powers started in front of the camera at 5 years old, landing her first audition as Sally Brown in the Peanuts Charlie Brown cartoons. After taking a break in her teenage years to focus on her education, she decided that the film and television industry was in her blood. For the last 30 plus years, Hilary has had a very successful career as a script supervisor, enabling her to learn from some of the greatest directors and actors. She is also a commercial actress, a print model, she guest stars on television, and is a feature film actor. We talk about all of this and more on this episode of the Film Florida Podcast. Here's my conversation with Hilary Momberger Powers. Welcome to the Film Florida Podcast, Hilary.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. So let's kind of start at the beginning. What's your origin story?
Okay. Who am I? All right. Well, I'm Hilary Momberger, and I was raised in Los Angeles. I am one of those people that have spent most of their life there. I was raised in Tarzana in a very large, chaotic family, which gave me the creative juices to either kill myself or expand, and I've chosen to expand. So I grew up in this crazy seven kids, lots of horses, lots of stuff as a child. My mother was a Jackie Gleason girl in New York City and a model, and she went from that appraise to having seven children. So she got her acclimate somewhere. So as a kid, when we were in Los Angeles, she wanted to put her children into the film industry. And so she loaded four of us into an old station wagon, and we drove down to Hollywood. We were living in Tarzana, which was about 25 miles away, 20 miles away from Hollywood. And at the time, there were like two lanes on each side, and it was like 20 minutes to get to Hollywood. Now it's like 2.5 hours to get to Hollywood. So anyway, so we loaded up and we went to an agent, and all four of us got signed. We had no clue what we were doing. I was 5 years old. My sister was 8, and my brother was going on 10. So we just got this agent, and my first audition, I went to go audition with this guy named Charles Schulz and Bill Melendez. I had no clue what I was doing. I was just a little girl that just loved meeting people. I'm super personable. That's one of my gifts God gave me, but you know, it can be a curse sometimes too. But
sure,
I went ahead and met this guy, and I didn't have to do lines. It wasn't like I had to audition. He just wanted to see if my personality fit with his kids that he was working with. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, you know, my first audition, I booked Sally Brown in a cartoon show around Peanuts, which, like, at the time, I had no idea what I was doing.
Right.
You know, I just happened to be very, you know, whatever you call it, luck, you call it the hand of God. I don't know. I just was very blessed to where I would go on an audition and it wasn't work. And I think that's the key to anything, is don't go in trying to get something. Just go have fun. Mm-hmm. And then life surprises you. And I would go on these auditions, and I booked a lot of commercials as a kid. Mm-hmm. Of course, there was only four channels.
Right.
But that's kind of where I started, is in Los Angeles.
So how long did you play Sally Brown?
From when I was 5 to I was 12.
Okay.
My voice changed at that point.
Sure. At any point during that time, did you actually realize what a role that really was? Or was it years later that you figured it out?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm a different product from the kids today. I didn't want to be famous. I didn't want to be different. I wanted to just be a kid. Mm-hmm. I grew up in a very large family. Well, there was four kids, and then became 5, 6, and 7. And I just wanted to just be a kid. So it was a little different lifestyle where I would go to school if I made it to school because I was on set a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm an artist. I learned how to color really well. So now I'm a fine artist. I've kind of morphed that into a different art. And I would go to school. And immediately after, I would go in auditions.
Yeah.
So it became a job. I didn't know what I was doing. And I was a little embarrassed of it because they would say, aren't you on TV? And I go, no, that's my sister. You know, it's kind of a little bashful when it came to that. But until my 30s, I didn't realize what a big deal it was. I kind of left that life behind and tried to forge to something else. And we can talk about that. But I just ended up, you know, realized that, wow, this is kind of cool. Yeah. And now I'm super proud. It's like when people say, will you sign something? Absolutely. Oh my gosh. I'm just as excited about being a cartoon character as they are meeting me. So it's kind of like a refreshing thing when someone acknowledges what I've done.
When you record stuff as Sally, was that with the other kids? Were you always by yourself? How involved in the entire process did that go?
Either Charles Schulz or Bill Melendez, who I have fond memories of both of them, especially Bill Melendez. I would sit on his lap like a little girl and twist his mustache because he had like a Salvador Dali mustache. I thought it was the coolest thing since, you know, White Toast. But we did not go into the same room together because they really wanted to capture your character as it was and put it in with the other kids. We respond to whomever's next to us, and we sometimes become like them.
Sure.
Because we want to be accepted and loved. And that's mm-hmm. what the whole Peanuts character was about. Like each individual kid had their own stuff going on.
Right.
And they all accepted each other, sometimes begrudgingly. Like I picked on my brother all the time, Charlie Brown, but mm-hmm. I still loved him. Like he was my hero. Which is, but he would take Bill Melendez or Charles Schulz. We would go in individually. The only time that I recollect being together is when we would sing together because of some stuff where we all sang. So we would all get in the room because that's actually needs to be more like each other.
Right.
So it sounds better. So he would use us individually so he could capture our character as singing.
Very cool. Very cool. Now, you worked in the industry until your early teens, and then you decided to focus on education. So in your late 20s, though, you enrolled at UCLA for film. Mm-hmm. What was the UCLA experience like? And, you know, how did you get your acting experience to prepare for these type of studies?
Well, when I had kind of left, abandoned my film because I, you know, had one of those little episodes, you know, like one of those /me-too-ish things happened in my early 20s. And I thought, oh, I can't go down this road. I'm too vulnerable for this world. I left a school and I have one of those crazy backgrounds as a little Hollywood child backgrounds, good girl turned bad, mm-hmm. you know, had to stealing cars, arrested for assault and battery robbery. Mm-hmm. I'm one of those good girls. Huh. And then it flipped around. I ended up getting sober and my life switched and I went back to college and went back to high school, went to college, went to nursing school and worked in clinics and such because I'm LVN. And it didn't satisfy me because I'm an artist. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up going to art school downtown and I got a job working at a paste up and layout. It was to make movie posters.
Oh.
And I was working on this movie poster and I thought, God, I want to go back and work in film. And that was my aha moment. Like every road leads to where you're supposed to go to. It wasn't mm-hmm. a waste of information, waste of education, because I still use it. I use my art in everyday life. I had a mentor at the time because I was, you know, I think everybody needs somebody to look up to. She was really great with me. I said, I have one more semester of art school and I don't want to do it. I also found out I was a fine artist because I had to take art classes in this graphic. And she goes, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to go back to working on movies. And she said, oh my God, you got to complete this. And I said, why? I'm not going to use it. I know it. I know in my gut. She said, if you don't get a job in the first 6 months, you're finishing my art degree. I said, you got it. Game on. Mm-hmm. I'm very competitive, so I have that power side to me. So I went to UCLA Extension because they have great courses, and I took a course on script supervising because I thought I want to use my brain. I want someone to appreciate me, not for my looks, but my brain. Mm-hmm. And so I went for the nerdy role. So I got a job. And then within the first 6 months, it took me about 9 months to learn the craft. And within the first couple months, I got a job on a little Disney short film. And I thought, bam, I'm in. Uh-huh. And it was just job after job for no money. It's one of those, you got to do what you love or don't do it.
Right.
I was so excited to be back in, but not in front of the camera, because I just emotionally was not in that place. You know, I didn't have the armor on and I was just a little bit too vulnerable.
Yeah.
But I knew if I focused on keeping everything in order on set, which is what a continuity does, we keep the continuity of the whole movie. And I grew up in this chaotic, alcoholic, crazy family. I'm the middle child. So it's a great role for me because I always knew what was going on. And I thought, okay, take who I am and use it for where I want to go. And that's how I became a script supervisor.
Now we've had voiceover roles, we've had acting roles, and now we are with script supervisor. Most people probably understand if they're listening to the podcast what a script supervisor does, but for those that may not, like, give the definition, like, explain what that role is on set.
Okay. So when everybody's got, there's the art department, there's the makeup and the hair and the set dressing and the production designer and the props, things that you hold that actors use or whichever is on set. And a movie is shot out of continuity, meaning if I have 10 scenes, one day we may do scene 7 and 4 because of location. Everything's on a schedule for money and everything is shot out of order. Yet the movie may go for 25 scenes, let's say in a 100 scene movie, maybe only one day. So, and you're jumping all over the place. So my job is to basically man the script. The actors make sure that they're, you know, that I help them with their lines. And I make sure the continuity matches, meaning the hair, the makeup, what he was looking like. Let's say he stepped from the inside of the house to outside, but I don't shoot the outside for 6 weeks. So I keep the continuity because the actor will say, oh, I stepped out and I had the purse in my right hand. I go, oh, no, I have a picture, or I made a note of it. And there's usually a little power struggle there. And they'll say, well, no, I had it in my left hand. And so I can refer back to that. So I keep the script. I keep the notes, what's happening. For the production, I keep how much we're shooting, how many minutes, how many seconds been shot, how long the scenes are, what needs to be picked up. It's a pretty huge job. Mm-hmm. It's not just continuity, it's also taking notes.
Yeah.
You know, so I work with the director and the editor.
Well, the continuity side of things, it's one of those, nobody notices the job unless you don't do it well. And then everybody's pointing out.
They're like, oh my God. It's like, dude, do you have anything else to do today? Don't you have a job? Don't you have like family to talk to? Because obviously you got no one else to bitch at. So.
Yeah, that's funny. Now, you've been a script supervisor for both film and television. Is there a difference between the two?
I used to think that film is a little, it takes a lot longer. Mm-hmm. There's a more art form to it. And I say that with 100% respect because I'm a writer also on the side, but film is a little bit more art piece. I'm going to say television is really fast. Like you are go, go, go. I mean, I worked on a Tyler Perry show a couple years ago. I can't even remember the name. I worked on so much stuff, but where we did 24 episodes in 14 days.
Yeah.
Which used to take 6 to 9 months. And we were shooting 125 pages a day. And it's like, go, 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 go. We felt the cameras were just rolling all. It was insanity. But I can say, hey, I did that. Oh my God, I survived the shipwreck. go team. Go team disaster. You know? Self-abuse. I'm in. So it's really fast. If you want to improve your craft, get on a TV show.
Yeah. Yeah. Now you've been a script supervisor. I want to go through a couple of the titles here, but you've been a script supervisor in a number of things that people would certainly recognize. The Help, Spider-Man 3, Everybody Hates Chris, Grey's Anatomy. Do you have any favorite on-set stories that you can share from any of those productions?
I had a lot of fun on the Fast and Furious. I did second unit for a couple of them, for 7 and 9. So much fun. So much fun. Just, you know, the traveling aspect was unbelievable. You don't do that as much anymore. They don't bring crew as much. They'll just go to a town and grab crew. But I think the wonderful thing about film is it's like joining a circus. Okay. And there's only a few people that can join the circus. It's an insane ride. And it's not for the normal set, I gotta say. Because you have to be so flexible to it that last minute, we're going here, we're changing, we're doing this. And if you have a consistent, like that host and personality, it may be a little bit too wacky, but it's like joining a circus. So you get this whole family unit. You get to know people really quick because you're stuck in a tank for 14 hours. So you end up learning about people and finding out other people's path. And it's fascinating because a lot of people come from so many different places. You know, when I started in the 80s, you know, in the 60s, it was all family. It's funny, there was a key grip named Deeks. I can't remember his first name. And I remember him as a child doing commercials. And then 25 years later, I was working on a TV show, a commercial, and there he was. So it was a big family unit. But, you know, as the years went on, you see all these people. I'm from Ohio. I'm from Kentucky. And it's great to hear other people's stories. So it's a pretty, the family unit and the kind of the crazy family unit it's a great experience if you like that kind of stimuli.
Right. Right. Now, I want to ask about your time on The West Wing, because it happens to be my favorite television series of all time. I binge it every summer. So you worked as the script supervisor on a few episodes during season one, if I have that correct. So what was it like to work with that cast and crew on the show during the early part of the series?
Well, I actually did work the whole season. Okay. I was script supervisor, so I did all 24 episodes. And then I chose not to go back because I was exhausted. And the first year was crazy because we were working 18, 19, 20 hour days.
Right.
And Tommy Shalami, amazing human being. Aaron Sorkin is just one of the kindest, most brilliant, fun, interesting. I love Aaron Sorkin. You know, shout out to Aaron. He's such a good guy. And so is Tommy. And so was the cast was incredible. Allison Janney was just another person. You know, she was just, you know, she's great. But the first year was really brutal. It was really brutal, super brutal. There was a lot of drama going on. You know, Aaron hadn't completed all the episodes. So we would show up one day and we'd say, okay, we're shooting in the Oval Office. What are we shooting today? Mm-hmm. And we would wait for him to write the scene and then he throws the scene. It was so juxtaposed. Everything was like put together. It was like a Pollock art piece where it was just, this makes no sense. But in the end, you're like, wow.
Yeah.
It was brilliant. So I loved working with those guys who were just insane. But as I said, I chose my well-being the year, the second semester I was going to say, the second year. And later on, I was given the gift to work on Studio 60. So I got to work with Matthew Perry and Tommy Shalami and Aaron Sorkin again. And I worked on that season. And that only went one season. So that was from this great, great, great show where the world was like in awe to this TV show where it didn't go too well. It was okay. Like we all just put 150% into it. And it was just, like I said, I love working. Tommy Shalhoub is a fantastic director, brilliant. And as I said, Aaron Sorkin was very kind, and I wrote a memoir, and he was kind enough to write me an excerpt praising it and saying the writing was fantastic. So that, you know, he's my hero.
Well, I mean, let's stick with an Aaron Sorkin question. You know, the writing style of The West Wing is unique and has inspired many writers, you know, since then. Can you talk more about working with the specific material? Were there any challenges that came from specifically Aaron Sorkin's writing? Because it is so precise. From a script supervisor standpoint. Yeah,
oh
exactly.
My God. I needed to get somebody in to help me because there was so much continuity and we were working this crazy, like I said, crazy, crazy schedule. And we would do a lot of Steadicam. Mm-hmm. A Steadicam is a camera that's you put it on your body. And as you walk, it films it as if you're the fourth wall.
Yep.
And we would do these Steadicam shops.
The famous walk and talks.
Yeah, with Dave Komides, who's one of the most amazing Steadicam operators and a great DP. If you ever have a chance to work with him, hey, Dave, he's a great guy. So we would do these Steadicams and we would have to go from one room to the other, to the other, to the other. And it would have to all. So there's a lot of matching, a little insanity, and someone would walk in the wrong place. And Aaron was really, he's really, really meticulous. That's why he is the king.
Mm-hmm.
If they would say, we walked into the office and someone would say, we walked into an office, that was it, cut.
Mm-hmm.
Every A is the, and specifically you had to be on point. Like if I were acting in it, I would have been fired. Bingo. I'm too creative. They would go out. So my job was, I had to get everybody to be on book. And I was like, Aaron would say, don't you let these actors not say my words. I put them on the page for a reason. I'm like, aye, aye, Captain. You know, off with their heads, mate. But yeah, so that was really challenging. It was like, oh my God, did I miss a word? Did I miss an So I had actually somebody come help me to keep an either watch the continuity or keep an ear. And they knew that. So they ended up getting two people by the second season. So the first year I got all the lashings and they learned a lot of stuff on my model. And then I was like, all right, guys, I know it's going to be less painful, but I think I need to break. So I think I worked on movies after that where we'd shoot four scenes a day instead of 30. It was crazy.
Now, shifting gears just a little bit, you also worked on a few episodes of Everybody Hates Chris. And funny story is that Vincent Martella, who played Greg, was a guest on our podcast last season. And so do you have any interesting onset stories of your time with Everybody Hates Chris?
I worked the whole season, 2005. And I love Terry Crew. What a great guy. Funny. And then I had a lot of fun on that. And then I had a lot of tragedy. My father had died during that. And that's why I didn't go back. It died. And I had a lot of family stuff to deal with. So I'm on Everybody's Hates Chris, and we're going through this. This is the new thing with Paramount. We have to take sexual harassment classes on everybody. They're very meticulous in the film industry, everybody, because there's so much inappropriateness that goes on constantly.
Mm-hmm.
So we go to the sexual harassment class, and guess who has to be there? Chris Rock. And he was so funny. Like it was an entertainment just to go to this class. I was like, oh my God, I could have sold tickets for this. Wow. It was like, how lucky am I? And Chris Rock is great. And I'm not uptight, so I can laugh at anything. So anyway, it was just hilarious. And it's just great to work with a really fun, creative, playful crowd. And it wasn't so uptight where the words had to be, you know, on book. You would see a lot of personality come out. So Vince had a lot of personality. It was a lot of fun.
Yes. Well, and you and he have a lot in common, as it turns out, where he played a cartoon character for years as well. So that
right.
Yeah. Hillary, you've had kind of an interesting combination where you read scripts as an actor, you also read scripts as a writer, you read scripts as a script supervisor. I bet you have a really good ability to you know, be a script doctor and see what works and what doesn't work. Tell me about that.
Actually, bingo, that's what I do on the side, is because I've read probably 40,000 scripts, and I'm not exaggerating, even possibly more. And I've been through the process where, like I said, I've, you know, worked with Aaron, I've worked with, you know, David O. Russell during his script changing, and I've worked on TV sets where we do revisions. And because I've read so many scripts and because of my craft, I can take a script, which I have people send me scripts, and they say, can you clean this up? Well, it takes me 2 hours because my eyes train to clean up crap. So I could say, well, if you move scene 4 to 17, the continuity is going to work better. And your character in scene 2 is not linear. And by scene 77, I don't even know who he is. So maybe you need to keep up the continuity, and I can help with the dialogue to make it match from the beginning of the script to the end. And so going and cleaning up and saying, none of this dialogue works. I mean, it's not an insult. It's just saying, do you want this to bam? And I also read so many scripts. I know how to start things. I know how to finish things. It's like, oh, I remember the scene with Jack Lemmon. Boom. Oh, I remember this scene with Rita Rudner. Oh my God, that was a funny line. I could tweak that one so I can throw stuff in for people. And so it's an art. It's an absolute art. It's fun. I love doing it. If any of your listeners have scripts they need cleanup, I'm there. You know, well, like I said, I have 33 years as a script supervisor and an actor my whole life. Yeah. It's like being a journeyman. I learn because I've been in the trenches.
Well, and talk about it from the opposite side now, where there are times when people will take that feedback and think you're calling their baby ugly. So there's an important part within our industry where you have to take the feedback, and it's not a personal attack on you. It's just trying to get the final product from point A to point B to point C. How do you, you know, like talk about the importance of people that receive your feedback on actually receiving it and not just thinking, oh, well, she doesn't know what she's talking about.
Right. Well, the good thing is I'm an artist and I also write and I'm a painter, and I can see how I have to be open to suggestions. And if you're coming to me in the first place, it's telling me that you're open. It's not what you say. It's how you say it. Mm-hmm. You know, if I said, hey, listen, your script is shit, we're going to go, oh. But if I can come in there and say, can I suggest something? Because you have to be open to this suggestion. And let's look at it this way. And let's look at it this way. Mull it over, read it, go to sleep on it, take a couple days. So they'll get their old script. They'll get a list of suggestions. And then I'll implement them in the script. And then they can have someone else read it. Because I know for me, like I wrote my memoir. I've had to rewrite it 7 times. Mm-hmm. The first time I was done. I was so tired. I was done. Don't tell me it. And then I let people suggest it. Like I said, Aaron Sorkin read it and thought, this is beautiful. I thought, really? And he said, what I would suggest is do this, this, and this. And I'm a fool not to take his advice. Sure. So I see different styles, mm-hmm. and I've been able to put different styles in because I'm saturated in it. And you do whatever you want with it. You know, I'm just giving suggestions. Right. And especially someone who's not in the film industry that wants to be a part of it. I mean, my advice is cheap compared to what I had to go through. It was very expensive on my well-being to go through all those years of, like, you know, not having a relationship or partnership because I was at work all day long. So I bled, sweat, and tears. So anyway, if I can add to somebody's life or on a creative venue, I would love to do that for anybody.
So let's go back and focus a little bit more on your acting, because you started there, and throughout all of this, you mm-hmm. have continued to act. And so you've been doing it since you were so young. How have you seen your acting style evolve through the years?
Well, because I benched it for a while, but I got to tell you, working as a script supervisor, I've got the best. I was sitting right front, up front, like, Like Marsha Harding. I mean, I'm working with her. Like I would say, how do you do this? And she would say, you want to know how you act? Just be yourself. That's it. Just say the words and just be you. I mean, what a great mentor. So I got to write up close and personal, have these personal acting classes. So I get to observe. I mean, I work with Jack Lemmon. How lucky am I?
Yeah.
I've worked with some of the worst actors. How lucky am I? So I can see what I don't want to be like. But I would sit there and I would think, oh my gosh, do I want to do this? Like there was such a heart pulling at my heart going, it's so fun to play and make believe. And that's why I was it was fun to make believe. I was a character. I mean, I was a cartoon character. I got to be all these other little characters. I did stuff. I was doll voices for Mattel and Hanna-Barbera. And, you know, I've done over probably 300 commercials as an actor. And I just, 2 years ago, I did a movie called Britney Lost Her Phone that should be coming out next year, which is a satire on, you know, I was the mother of a Christian family who was coming across country to go find the promised land. I end up in Joshua Tree. It's just a very silly, ironic. And we find a phone, an Apple phone, and it had Britney's name on it. It's about the demise of the family and the communication. And it's hugely funny. And I got to have fun on it. So I remember when I was, you know, working on all these movies, I kept thinking, I want to do it. I want to do it. But once you step out of the water, you're always afraid to jump back in. And yeah. I put my toe in it and I go, oh, God, can I do it? Because you got to take a risk. And so I made a decision. I sent my picture off to a modeling company, a modeling agent, and she signed me. She said, whenever you're not working, I'll put your face out there. So I started getting print work, which I would love to do more print work in Florida, FYI. Mm-hmm. Contact my agent. I love print work. I'll do any. It's fun. It's fun. You know, I'd like to get my face out there more. But yeah, so I ended up just putting my feet back in a little bit more. And then I started taking classes. And I just tried a different mediums. It's like painting. Do I use oil or acrylic? Stand-up, improv, drama, serious comedy. So it's just using your instrument for different venues and you find out what works best for you. But I like doing a lot of different things. So I did a little bit more, a little bit more, and now I'm in Florida and this is just what I'm doing.
Well, you know? And do you have a preference in terms of the on-camera stuff or in front of the camera stuff?
Comedy is easy because I'm just such a dork and I don't care if I look bad. Like I will distort my face and I don't care. I will dress fat, ugly. I don't care. Like my ego's like smashed 100 times. So I like doing comedy. It's easy, but I really like the drama because I've had a lot of traumatic things happen to me. So I like to reach in there, you know,
use help. Some of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now you mentioned you're a Florida resident now, which is great. What brought you here and what kind of the next phase of your career now that you are here?
What brought me here? Well, I left California and I was like, I need a change. I went through a divorce and I thought, you know what? I have nothing holding me. And I had worked in Georgia quite a few times. So I went to Georgia and I did a pit stop there. And like I said, I worked with Tyler Perry and I did a handful of things, did a bunch of commercials as an actor, worked on I produced a short film that is in the circuits right now that I was in, but I also produced it. And I started writing there and I wrote a TV series that we're trying to pitch after everything gets settled. But, and I got an agent. I wrote a memoir called Peanuts to Percocet, Notes on a Hollywood Childhood.
Wow.
Yeah, which is about being, you know, this icon and blowing your life up and becoming I'm a recovering alcoholic too. Go Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah. And for many, many, many years. And just rechanging your life and going back to what you want to do. And going in with a new pair of glasses. And that was pretty much it. I'm coming through this crazy lifestyle. But so I would come down to Florida because I'm like, oh, God, I miss the beach. I miss the ocean. And then I thought, I got to pull the trigger. If I don't do it, I won't do it. So, you know, God's for me, who can be against me? I packed everything up and I came down to South Florida, to West Palm Beach area. And I just love it here. Like I said, I'm a writer, so I'm trying to get my book going, my agent in Los Angeles. And I'm writing another series this next week. I'm completing another pilot for something else. Hopefully we'll get that off ground. And I'm attached to another TV show as a writer and also a girl race car reality TV show, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and I'm an actress and I'm a model, and I would love to work more as modeling in Florida because it's just really up my alley, and it's I feel it. So that's it. I like to work more. Yeah. Who wouldn't, you know, just stay creative. I just like being creative. And I have a lot of experience on both sides. I don't even care working as continuity. It's not my fate. I'm 33 years. I'm kind of over it, but I can do it with my eyes closed, and I produce things. So I'm just an asset to any production, you know, because I know how it works, how the wheels work. So,
So where can people keep up with everything that's going on with you?
I'm not a real social media girl. I'm like, oh, you know, I had all my information, Hello Georgia, hacked. So I had to do a identity fraud. And I just thought, oh my gosh, I have to put that so much into Instagram. You can get me on Instagram, Hillary Momberger Powers. You can, you know, DM me there, or I'm with Talent Direct down in Florida and Del Rey. My agent Jamie, go team.
Which Talent Direct is a member of Film Florida, so we love them.
Right, we love them. Go Jamie, and Bianca, give them perks. And then I'm also with my writing. Chelsea, she's my agent in Los Angeles for my book and for my TV shows that I've written. So,
and you have a website too, right?
I do. I have HillaryPowers.com. That's my grandmother's name. And also PeanutsToPercocet.com. That's my website for my book. You can all check that out. That will be coming out. I have every full intention of making it happen. Please, God. And you can always email me at, you know, Hillary. You can either HillaryArt143@gmail.com. If you like, get a hold of me. Work for hire.
Yep.
I'm pimping myself out. I have no problem with that. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Hillary, thanks so much for spending time with us today, sharing some great stories. We really appreciate you being on the podcast. Thank you very much.
I really appreciate you inviting me, and all of your listeners. Have a really, really funny day.
Thanks for listening to the Film Florida podcast. For more information about Film Florida, go to filmflorida.org. And like or follow our social media pages. If you're not already a member of Film Florida, please consider joining at filmflorida.org. Please also consider going to our website and donating $20.24 for our 2024 fundraising campaign. Check out the Film Florida merchandise at filmflorida.creator-spring.com. And please remember to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.